This is a Crestview Bible podcast. For more information, visit crestviewhutch.org.
Whether it's our employers offering to match our 401k contributions, or buy one, get one free, or like we had last week, vote and get a free Chick-fil-A sandwich. We love embracing the incentive and getting a better bang for our buck. Do you shop at Dillon's? Well, you'll get cheaper gas if you use a shopper card. Do you scan your receipt after you shop at Walmart? They'll hunt down better deals and give you actually money back if they find a cheaper price in town. So on and on we could go, because we understand that incentives are helpful and good. Our culture understands that. And so for 4 weeks, we've been in the book of Ecclesiastes. We've been digging into this book, and this book began with the phrase, vanity of vanities, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. There's so many things in life that are vanity, or they're not living up to their intended purpose. And the definition I gave for that was soap bubbles. So that's another translation. You could just insert, anytime you see the word vanity, you could just insert the word soap bubbles. Soap bubbles of soap bubbles, soap bubbles of soap bubbles, all is soap bubbles. So that's kind of what the writer's wanting us to see. He's wanting to burst our bubbles. And yet we still have to live life under the sun. We still have to live life on earth. So we're putting together a life on earth that's very much removed from what we envision true life would be above the sun. That's the contrast. That's where God is. But we have to live nonetheless. Now, last time we were in this book, a couple weeks ago, we teased out what life looks like under God's sovereignty under the sun. So chapters 5 through 7 helped us see that. Among other things, we were called to live in reverence to the God of heaven. That was at the beginning of chapter 5. And then we live under God by doing what's good. That was chapters 5 and 6. We live recognizing the obstacles that we have to doing what's good. And that's specifically our sin. That's where chapter 7 ended. We were introduced to a way of life that involves fearing God, reverencing Him, and the theme of joy was there again. And so I hope you're seeing that this theme that we've made for the book of the joy of fearing God under the sun, that it makes sense of the book, helps you see where we're headed. But it's almost as if we need some sort of incentive to live that way, right? I think there's some of us in this room, we're hearing the message of Ecclesiastes, and we're just kind of thinking, yeah, that's what I need to do. But we need some incentives. We need to kind of sweeten the deal, so to speak. And so how might the preacher, the one who's speaking, the one who's written this book of Ecclesiastes, how might he move us, his readers, to fear God with joy under the sun? I mean, what would you use to motivate your readers to do such a thing or to walk in that way? How might he compel us to this better way of living? Now, what we should know, as we've kind of steeped a little bit in the book of Ecclesiastes, that probably his way of incentivizing us is not going to be like we would. So he's going to do it with kind of like, oh yeah, that's kind of how we're going to emerge out of this, I think. So his way of communication is a little different than what we expect, but he's going to give us some incentives today nonetheless, regardless of how they might land on us. And so today, as we anticipate this, what stands in the way of you fearing God with joy under the sun? What objections would you make to that way of living? What rebuttals might you give? And do you think those things, those rebuttals, those objections, all those resistances to living that way are enough to undo that calling upon our lives? Because the reality of life is that life is raw. There's a rawness to life that we all feel. Life's full of anticipation, but it often fails to deliver. Happens over and over again. So we put hope in a political candidate, only to find that they let us down. Whether they were elected or unelected this past week, the elected ones are going to let us down. They're not going to totally do everything you want them to do. We think that a meal, like with friends or family or just the food itself, we think that meal is going to make us happy, maybe when we're famished or tired, and it's only a temporary pleasure. Maybe we overeat at that meal and we just walk away going, oh, I shouldn't have done that. It's a temporary pleasure. Or we think the right people would help, but even the right people can easily turn on us. You might work hard and think, well, if I can just burn my wheels and get to vacation, then I'm going to get the help that I need. I'm going to find the rest that I need. But that rest is going to prove elusive. Because you might be sleeping on a hotel room pillow. And it's awful. You just can't find the comfortable spot. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. So how are we going to live in light of this? This is what the writer's doing today. This is where he's taking us. And in today's passage, the preacher will dig into life and how life under-delivers. And he's going to call us up and out of that to fear God with joy. And so I hope you're able to listen and that you're drawn up and out in this way, that you would fear God with joy, that you'd walk out more convinced than ever that the way to live with all the pieces that you can't put together, the way to live is to fear him with joy. Now, today it might be the case that you're here and you don't have a relationship with God. So how do you find meaning in life when it doesn't deliver? It has to be more than just, well, I just try to be a good person. That makes a difference in the world. It has to be more than that. Because life isn't going to deliver. Life's going to treat you, being a good person, raw. You're going to have to deal with people. You're going to have to, all those things are still going to under-deliver. You might think, well, I kind of like karma. Like, if karma were true, and you were truly dealt the hand that you deserve based on the kind of person you are, we would all be doomed, right? Because you might think, well, I'm really a good person. Really? Let me take something from you then. Let's see how good you are. Let's see you experience death or suffering. Let's see you not get something you really want. Let's see you face some affliction. Let's see what kind of person you are in those moments. Then what? Karma doesn't kick in and say, well, you know, there's obviously like, you know, yeah, I'm pretty good, but of course when times are tough, I'm not. It doesn't work that way. So this is kind of what we have to wrestle with. Society would spiral downward with no hope of change if that was true, because none of us is that good. So we have, whether it's bad attitudes that we have towards other people, or dealing with all kinds of injustice in our world, or failing to embody noble virtues, and we know that's how we should live, life is raw. And so today, rather than digging deep into yourself, you need to see the realities of life for what they are so that you can be drawn up and out to God himself. That's what this sermon, I think, that's what these two chapters, I think, are trying to get you to do. That the rawness of life is telling you, don't dig deeper into yourself, but get pulled up and out to a life that God's called you to fear him with joy under the sun. There's a life that he's offering that is full of joy. So can you meet him there? Can you find this? This is where we're going to be heading today. And so I hope this leads to deeper expressions of wisdom in your life, that would be expressed in fearing God with joy under the sun in this life that you live. So I invite you to join me as we see two incentives to fear God with joy under the sun. Two incentives to fear God with joy under the sun. And let me just begin by reading verses 1 through 9 of chapter 8. So Ecclesiastes 8, verses 1 through 9. Let me read that as we get started. Who is like the wise? And who knows the interpretation of a thing? A man's wisdom makes his face shine, and the hardness of his face is changed. I say, keep the king's command because of God's oath to him. Be not hasty to go from his presence. Do not take your stand in an evil cause, for he does whatever he pleases. For the word of the king is supreme, and who may say to him, what are you doing? Whoever keeps the command will know no evil thing, and the wise heart will know the proper time and the just way. For there is a time and a way for everything, although man's trouble lies heavy on him. For he does not know what is to be, for who can tell him how it will be? No man has power to retain the spirit or power over the day of death. There's no discharge from war, nor will wickedness deliver those who are given to it. All this I observed while applying my heart to all that's done under the sun, when man had power over man to his hurt. So this is God's word. Thanks be to God. I almost chuckle every time I read a passage in Ecclesiastes because you walk away going, wow, must be really nice to be your friend. You know, just really? And then you also walk away going, what in the world is he talking about? So two incentives to fear God with joy under the sun. And the first incentive, which is all of chapter 8, is we fear God with joy because life is uncertain. Life is uncertain. Life is uncertain. You might have gotten that even as we read. Life is uncertain. And the first uncertain situation that emerges in this passage that we just read is found when we're living under the government of others. In this case, there's a king who's ruling. People are living under the rule of a king. So right out of the gate there in verse 1, is he wise? Why is he choosing to do what he does? There's questions there right out of the gate. Wisdom is a way of living that helps your face to shine. And God put that king in place. And our disposition ought to be to do what he says because God did this. We shouldn't be quick to leave when he summoned us or plot against him. This is only going to endanger us. This is what we're looking at. And so there aren't too many people who can say to the king, what are you doing? I mean, like even this week, didn't that come full circle? Like a reporter, and you might just think about this, but a reporter was questioning the president and like really demanding and just adios. I mean, the reporters just sent packing. Because not too many people can say to a king or say to a ruler, what are you doing? There's not, it just doesn't happen. It takes a unique situation. So in verse 5, we should keep the command but not do evil. Wisdom walks in the proper way, aware that judgment may be coming someday. And God is going to right those wrongs. God is going to execute justice. There's a time and a way for everything, and God will have his time where he rights these wrongs. Man's trouble is that we're hastening this coming judgment with our actions. So the more and more we burn our wheels to try to do something, the more and more messed up we get, and it's just compounding the problem that God's justice is going to come. And there's uncertainty. Even if you served in the king's court, which a lot of people that comment on this passage believe that's what's going on, that there's someone who's serving in the king's court, and yet there's all this uncertainty there, right? Who knows what will be? Who can tell you how it's going to be? Who can predict what's going to happen in Kansas over the next year as we have a newly elected governor? I mean, there's, you might have an idea, but who knows? We don't know. So it's all mysterious. It's uncertain. There's an uncertainty. There's a time for everything, and there's nothing new under the sun. No one has the power to retain the spirit. No one has power over the day of death. There's no discharge from war. There's no release from wickedness to those who are given it. So wisdom may be the path to walk in, but there's going to be rhythms of life that are naturally going to come your way. And so the preacher says, he concludes all this, says in verse 9, I observed all this while applying my heart to all that's done under the sun when man had power over man to his hurt. This is when he learned this, in the king's court, when man had power over man to his hurt. Injustice was abounding. So there's a sense in which justice is coming and right actions are possible in the midst of this, even in the uncertainty that we face when we're ruled by others, but who knows what's going to happen? That's the point we're to make. So you might think, well, what's the good news here? Well, the good news is if life is that uncertain, then what are you going to build your life on? That's the writer's point. Like, okay, if you all just concede, yeah, government, who knows what they're going to do? It's uncertain. So how are you going to live? You might say, well, I'm going to do good. I'm going to live a life of wisdom. Yeah, but that's going to lead, there's going to be injustice that's going to come your way. There's going to be all kinds of things that are going to emerge. And who knows what's going to be? It's uncertain. How are you going to live? So that's how the writer's trying to incentivize you to live a certain way. He's saying, oh, you don't think that fearing God with joy is the best way to live? Well, then how do you deal with all this uncertainty? That's kind of the argument that he's making. So under the government of others. And then he turns the corner in verses 10 through 17. That there's an uncertainty that's found with God's mysterious ways. So let's read that, verses 10 through 17. Here's what we read there. Then I saw the wicked buried. They used to go in and out of the holy place and were praised in the city where they had done such things. This also is vanity. Because the sentence against the evil deed is not executed speedily. The heart of the children of man is fully set to do evil. Though a sinner does evil 100 times and prolongs his life, yet I know that it will be well with those who fear God because they fear before him. But it will not be well with the wicked. Neither will he prolong his days like a shadow because he does not fear before God. There's a vanity that takes place on earth. that there are righteous people to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked, and there are wicked people to whom it happens according to the deeds of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity, and I commend joy. For man has nothing better under the sun but to eat and drink and be joyful, for this will go with him in his toil through the days of his life that God has given him under the sun. When I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that's done on earth, how neither day nor night do one eye see sleep, then I saw all the work of God, that man cannot find out that work that is done under the sun. However much man may toil in seeking, he will not find it out. Even though a wise man claims to know, he cannot find it out. So there's an uncertainty when it comes to thinking about God's mysterious ways. And this is what's going on in verses 10 through 17. Verse 10 shows us that the wicked are buried, but there's an injustice in the midst of this. The worst people in life are praised when their life is over. People that were scoundrels their entire life on the day of their death are exonerated. And it's an injustice. It's a vanity. To add insult to this, others learn this evil behavior. So there's others. The heart of the children of man is fully set to do evil. So people can see the wickedness and they learn that. In the face of injustice, others embrace this way of living, this way, evil way of living. But regardless of the reality of sinners doing evil and getting longer lives, it will be well with those who fear God because they fear before him. That's his point here, right? He's trying to get us to see that no matter what kind of injustice or uncertainty there is in the world, the best way to live is to fear God, to relate to him, to awe him. God will care for those who relate to him, who are in a relationship with him. So that's what he means when it's best to fear God because they fear before him. It will be well with those who fear God because they fear before him. God's going to care those who relate to him in this way. He's going to care for them. It will not go well with the wicked who refuse to fear God. And yet, as verse 14 shows, God's ways are mysterious. Sometimes the righteous get treated as wicked, and wicked get the benefits of the righteous. This is a vanity. So this is not the intended purpose, right? This is a vanity. And so, because we can't get the life we want, and it's so uncertain, we should enjoy life in the present. So he says, there's nothing better under the sun than to eat and drink and be joyful, for this will go with you through the life God gives you under the sun. So be characterized by joy. So then the writer wraps up in verse 16. He sought to know wisdom, to understand God's mysterious ways on earth, and he was unable to understand the whole. He was unable to understand God's works, and he was unable to understand the elusive way that man toils to find it and can't. The wise may boast that they know it, but it's a mysterious thing at the end of the day. God's ways are mysterious. So taking this whole chapter together, whether it's the government of others or whether it's God's government, God's ways, there's so much of life that's uncertain and mysterious. So how do we live? Well, we search for meaning. If we're searching for meaning beyond us, how do we live, even if we can't find it? The writer's point is that we should fear God and embrace joy. Those are the two things he told us, two ways he told us to live in the midst of this. Fear God and embrace joy. So no matter how uncertain life is, it will go well with those who fear him. You might think, well, I just don't know what's going to come of this. Yeah, so you better fear God then. That's the thing you can be sure of, that it will go well with those who fear him. He will care for those who fear him. And joy is commended. Eat, drink, and enjoy the life that you've been given under the sun. Enjoy it. Life may be uncertain, but you have life right now. You have the opportunity right now to fear God. You have the opportunity right now to have joy. Are you going to choose that? Are you going to walk into that? Now, that might not be the incentive that you're looking for. Right? So the incentive you're looking for might be like, well, God, why don't you promise me that if I fear you and have joy, then you're going to come through and do this. And the writer's saying, nope, there's so much of life that's uncertain. This is all that you can boil it down to. Fear God and walk in joy. That's the incentive, right? Life is uncertain. That's the incentive. But you have this now. You can live this way. There's solid ways to live in the midst of life's uncertainties. So therefore, let's embrace joy in fearing God under the sun. That's the writer's point in chapter 8. Well, there's one more incentive here that we get. So far, really good news, right? Life's uncertain. Did anybody walk in today and think, oh no, I know what's up in life. I mean, I know what's going to come from all these people we just elected. And I know exactly what God's up to all the time. No, life's uncertain. We all agree that. So fear God with joy. That's the point of chapter 8. Chapter 9. What's going to be the incentive he goes to here? You think it's going to be any different? So here's the point. We fear God with joy because the future is unpredictable. The future is unpredictable. Great. It's super good news. I mean, don't you just feel encouraged already? Don't you feel your heart just warming as I say that? Oh, life's uncertain and the future's unpredictable. Those are the incentives. Thank you. That's really good. So this is what we read in chapter 9. We turn to this other motivator. And the motivator that we come back to now is death. So look at verse 1 of chapter 9. Let's read down to verse 12. All this I laid to heart, examining all, how the righteous and the wise and their deeds are in the hand of God. Whether it is love or hate, man does not know, both before him. And it's the same for all, since the same event happens to the righteous and the wicked, to the good and the evil, to the clean and the unclean, to him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As the good one is, so is the sinner. And he who swears is he who shuns an oath. There is an evil in all that's done under the sun, that the same event happens to us all. Also, the hearts of the children of man are full of evil, and madness is in their hearts while they live. And after that, they go to the dead. But he who is joined with all the living has hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. And they have no more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. Their love and their hate and their envy have already perished, and forever they have no more share in all that is done under the sun. Go, eat your bread with joy, and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. Let your garments be always white. Let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love, all the days of your vain life that he's giving you under the sun, because that is your portion in life, and in your toil and your toil at which you toil under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. For there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. Now let me read verses 11 and 12 too. Again, I saw that under the sun the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favor to those with knowledge, but time and chance happen to them all. For man does not know his time, like fish that are taken in an evil net, and like birds that are caught in a snare, so the children of man are snared at an evil time when it suddenly falls upon them. So the timing of death, the future is unpredictable, and this section really deals kind of with the timing of death. Coming full circle, I mean, God's mysterious ways triggers another thought. You know what else is mysterious? Is that the righteous, the wise, and their deeds are in the hand of God. Love and hate may come from all of our lives, but our lives are ultimately in God's hands. He's the one in control of this. And it's the same for us all, whether we're righteous or wicked, whether we're good or evil, whether we're clean or unclean, whether what I'm calling religious or unreligious, that's when those who sacrifice or those who don't. So whether you're a church-going person or not, whether you're good or you're a sinner, whether you swear or you don't, it's an evil that the same event happens to us all. And that same event that happens to us all is death. Death is coming for all of us. With this is the irrational behavior before we die, with hearts full of evil, madness in our hearts, and then we die. But life is precious. He says, better to be alive. There's a hope here. Those living know that they're going to die, but the dead know nothing. I mean, do you get the point he's making, right? We don't show up at funerals and have long, meaningful conversations with the person that's dead because they're gone. Right? I mean, I'm not talking about the grieving process. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have ongoing conversations with them. It's over. Their life, their body of work is completed. There's no more toil for the dead. So the living may know that they're going to die, but the dead know nothing. They have no reward. They're forgotten. There's no more toil for the dead. Like the dead can't come back and say, okay, you know what I'm going to try to do? I'm going to try to do better next time. It's over. Their love and their hate and their envy are gone. So because this is true, because the timing of death is so unpredictable, he's saying, if you're alive right now, live. And live in a way that is full of joy and fearing God. So we're called to go, eat bread with joy, drink wine with a merry heart, for God already approves what you do. You get that? God approves of normal, simple, joyful human existence. God approves of this. So we should walk out of here and enjoy today, because it's today. That's the writer's point. Let's allow our garments to be white and oil to be on our head. I think this is still speaking of the celebration. This is the kind of stuff that would happen at a wedding, right? When your garments would be white, oil on your head. There's celebration happening. He's saying, you're alive. Life is meant to be celebrated. You're not dead. Therefore, walk out today and joy. That's what he's saying for us to do. And verse 9, so powerful, right? Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life. So enjoy life with the wife that you love all the days of your vain life. So until death do you part is a thoroughly biblical way of thinking about marriage. Here's the way David Gibson puts it. Enjoy life with your spouse whom you love. Cherish and protect the person God's given you. If you're married, don't downplay this. We're not told live with your wife or put up with your wife, but rather enjoy life with your wife. If you're too busy to enjoy the life you have together, then you are too busy. End of story. If you don't enjoy each other, then it's likely you're simply taking what you can from each other to pursue other goals and ambitions that you're never going to and that are never going to give you all that they promise. Let me read it again because I botched the quote there. But if you don't enjoy each other, then it's likely you are simply taking what you can from each other to pursue other goals and ambitions that are never going to give you all that they promise. You may use each other to gain something that will turn out not to be gain, and lose each other in the process. So there's a wisdom here in what the writer's saying. I mean, I think a lot of us, we actually treat marriage like it's something that we're having to endure. And this is how God just takes this random part of Ecclesiastes and illuminates it to say, no, there's something bigger that I envision. It's not just put up with your wife or put up with your spouse or, live with them, but it's to enjoy life with them. Enjoy life with them. And I think that's so telling, that part of the quote, where if you don't enjoy time with your spouse, then what's it about? Like, is it about living for something else that's never going to deliver on what it's promising? I mean, so enjoy life together. Prioritize that. I mean, this is what the scriptures are calling us to do. It's an amazing thing in verse 9. These three verses here in Ecclesiastes 9, 7 through 9. Go, eat your bread with joy, drink your wine with a merry heart. God's approved what you do. God's approved of that. You might think, well, if I enjoy, like, it just seems so wrong. God's approved of this. He's clearly saying, I'm approving of this lifestyle. Enjoy life. That's the calling here. Fear God with joy under the sun. So, enjoy life, verse 9. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love, all the days of your vain life that he's given you under the sun, because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. So this is what God's given you. The charge continues in verse 10. To live with all your might while you live. I think this is one of Jonathan Edwards' resolutions. That I would live with all my might while I live. That I wouldn't live just paralyzed by something or paralyzed by death, but I would live. So there's no wisdom, knowledge, or passionate living once you step into death. That's the point. When you step into death and it's unpredictable, the timing of death is uncertain. We're not sure when we're going to get there. But once you step into there, there's not like more knowledge you're going to get. You know, there's not more passionate living that you're going to get to then. There's not more wisdom that you're going to be able to put into place in that day. So you're called to live that today. Our times and our living are so uncertain. The race isn't always won by the swift, right? Every week there's an upset in the NFL. In any sports game you watch, there's going to be an upset somewhere. Because life is uncertain. It's unpredictable. So what he says here, the race doesn't always go to the swift. Verse 11. The strong don't always win the battle. The wise don't always have bread. The intelligent aren't always the richest. These are the type of categories to think about. Those with knowledge don't always get the favor. Time and chance happen to all. The future's unpredictable. So we don't know our time. Like captured fish or birds, we can be ensnared by evil at any time. It even comes when we least expect it. So I think that's the illustration there with verse 12. Like fish that are taken in an evil net and like birds that are caught in a snare. So the children of man are snared at an evil time when it suddenly falls upon them. They don't know. If they could plan out like if fish knew that the net was coming this way, they could avoid it, they would. But they don't know that it's coming. That's the whole point here, right? And some of us say, praise God, because that made supper really good last night, you know, catching those fish. But no, that's the point. It's a lesson for us to learn. Life is unpredictable. So his point is, we should pursue joy. Pursue joy in life. We shouldn't mute it. We shouldn't dismiss it. We're called to joy. We've been given life underneath the sun here, so will we step into joy? What's it going to take for you to step into joy? Man, what would it look like if in Hutchinson, Kansas, that the body of believers in this room were the most joyful people in town? And we enjoyed life to the full. I mean, we just enjoyed it. We enjoyed our spouses. Everybody else is saying, like, oh, yeah, I got to live with this woman. You don't know what she does. Yeah, I can't do anything. I just, you know, whatever, you know. Or we're just complaining about everything. But what if we went out and we were just a force for joy in this community? Why do you live life? Oh, man, death is coming. Just enjoy life. You just enjoy that meal so much. Oh, yeah, I might not get a meal like this tomorrow. I'm just enjoying this. I mean, you really do seem to enjoy coffee. Yeah, and what else? It's just great, you know. Wine, coffee, drink, pop, whatever. It's just enjoy it. Enjoy, that's the calling on our life because the timing of death is unpredictable. And then there's also this, the way the chapter concludes. The future is also unpredictable, not only because of death, but because fools dismiss wisdom. So this is verses 13 through 18. I've also seen this example of wisdom under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it and besieged it, building great siege works against it. But there was found in it a poor, wise man, and he, by his wisdom, delivered the city, yet no one remembered that poor man. But I say that wisdom is better than might, though the poor man's wisdom is despised and his words are not heard. The words of the wise heard in quiet are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. So this is more unpredictability. Fools dismiss wisdom. There's a great wisdom that's possible under the sun. And this is the illustration, like a little city with few men in it. A great king comes and builds all this stuff to take the city down. But in the midst of this, there's a poor wise man, and his wisdom, he delivers the city. We're not told how that happens. This is just a kind of a story that is helping teach something. But no one remembered that poor man who saved the city. No one remembered him. And so the conclusion is, wisdom is better than might. Even though that poor man was forgotten and dismissed, wisdom is better than might. The words of the wise heard in quiet are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. And being wise is preferred to weapons of war. And one sinner destroys much good. So here's how one writer summarized that. That wisdom is stronger than 10 rulers and accomplishes more than the best efforts of a foolish ruler. Wisdom is both ignored by those who benefit from it and easily undone by little evil. And so what's the point that the writer's making here? How does this relate to unpredictability? Well, again, wisdom isn't the ultimate answer. I think there's some of us in this room that we're like, yeah, I know I should enjoy, but here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to throw together a life that's characterized by wisdom, and I'll show all you fools what life looks like. And so these verses are thrown in here at the end of chapter 9 to say, you know what? Even if you're the wisest person on the planet, it's still not enough. Because people are going to dismiss it. One little sinner can overturn wisdom. It's not enough. It's insufficient. So wisdom isn't the ultimate answer. If you have it, it's easily overturned by foolishness. So in light of this, in light of the future's uncertainty, you should fear God with joy. You should fear him. You shouldn't like lament like nobody cares about how wise I am. You know, if they would just pay attention to what I have to say, then life would be so much better. No, you should just enjoy life. You should fear God and enjoy life right now. In light of the future's uncertainty, fear God with joy. So with this final argument at the end of chapter 9, roped into the uncertainty of the timing of death, there's really only one way to live. With joy, right in the moment. That's the way to live. So are you able to step into that? Can you step into that? We fear God with joy because the future is unpredictable. So, these two incentives to fear God with joy. Fear God with joy because life's uncertain, and then fear God with joy because the future is unpredictable. I don't know how you view God in this room this morning, but this passage certainly shines some light on who he is. Again, one writer says, when we worship God and trust him and love him and walk with him, what we find is that he's not an old man in the sky who makes us bow down before him in a cold white room while he sits on a throne waiting to zap us when we get it wrong. No, what we discover is that God is like the host who welcomes us into his kingdom and to the most lavish of banquets for us to enjoy. That's how God is. That's who he is. This is what the joy of fearing God under the sun is about. Are you related to God in this way? Do you view him this way? Some of us just maybe have a hard time viewing that God would be happy about anything. And God is infinitely happy. God enjoys life way more than you and I do. So for some of us, we need to turn from our sin and we need to awe him for who he is. That he's a God ready to lavish all kinds of enjoyment on us. And he's done this through his son. This is when it came into crystal clear focus. Jesus' coming meant, as we're getting ready to celebrate, good news of great joy for all people. This is what he's done. And so now because of Jesus, it's not like the mute button pressed. The mute button is pressed because of sin. No, because of Jesus now, we can fully live life to the fullest and enjoy it. We can step into fearing God with joy. And if you're a believer, in the midst of life's uncertainty and in the midst of the future's unpredictability, how are you going to live? You might have heard that I've quoted this guy, David Gibson, a lot, and I think this is maybe a quote that really affected me the most, to just embrace this call to joy that the writer is giving. And here's how he puts it. It's vital to see that eating, drinking, dressing, and loving in these verses do not form an exhaustive list of God's gifts. Rather, it's a representative list of what it looks like to love life and to live it to the full. These things are a way of saying, when God made the world, he made it good. And no amount of being a Christian, of being spiritual ever changes the fact that God put you in a physical world with hands and food and drink and culture and relationships and beauty. Sin fractures everything. Sin distorts everything. It means we can't understand everything. But sin does not uncreate everything. So if we were to tap into the preacher's worldview and train of thought in this passage, I think the expanded list would go something like this. Ride a bike. See the Grand Canyon, go to the theater, learn to make music, visit the sick, care for the dying, cook a meal, feed the hungry, watch a film, read a book, laugh with some friends until it makes you cry, play football, run a marathon, snorkel in the ocean, listen to Mozart, call your parents, write a letter, play with your kids, spend your money, learn a language, plan a church, start a school, speak about Christ, travel to somewhere you've never been, adopt a child, give away your fortune and then some, shape someone else's life by laying down your own. Dying people who truly know they're dying are among the most alive. They're not here to live forever. They're here to live for now, for today, and most of all, they're to live with and for others. And you know that's the case, right? You know that's true. You've been around people that have such joy at the end of their lives, and how do they have that? Because they are just enjoying the moment in the now. And somehow, as Christians, in light of all that we stand to inherit because of Christ, we just live life just sourly. And so I think what, after these two chapters, just this week, as I was thinking on them, you know, God, make me the most joyful person that people can come in contact with. That joy would just be infectious about everything in life. Sure, sin distorts things. Sure, sin has messed up a lot. But sin has not uncreated the world. And God's put us here in this world to enjoy it. You know, he's put all these things around us, not so that we could say, well, yeah, I know God's made that, but he wouldn't want me to enjoy it. No, he's made it for you to enjoy. And so, might it be that we could step into fearing God with joy, that we may be a people who glorify and enjoy him forever. Let's pray. Father, thank you for just this word and how you're just reminding us about life. And there are people in this room for whom life is very raw, and they've tasted and seen, and it's very up close and personal to them that life is uncertain and the future is unpredictable, and in a sense it paralyzes them. And so I pray that through your word this morning you would draw us up and out, that you would draw us up to fear you and out into the enjoyment of this world that you've given us. This is our toil that you've given us under the sun, and we are grateful for your kindness to us and pray that we could walk in a way that is in keeping with your word. So shape us and mold us through these things, and we ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen.